T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Here's the pitch on the way, and a swing and a chopper slowly toward third base. Devers barehanding, quick throw. He got him at first. What a play by Rafi Devers.
Wow, that's the best play we've ever seen him make coming in on a ball like that. Wow.
Recapping the Red Sox win against the Astros.
The right-hander deals home. Devers swings, high drive, center field hit pretty good. Marisnik going back, track to the wall, looks up, and it's gone. Rafael Devers to dead center field. He hits a bomb off Verlander, and the Red Sox lead 2-1.
Dial 617-779-7937.
Walden fires, and there's a high fly ball, right field deep. Mookie back to the warning track by the bullpen. Waits and has it for the out. The ball game is over, and the Red Sox beat the Houston Astros 4-1 the final.
Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett on WEEI.
All right, well, it's nice to be the team that's not making all the boneheaded mistakes like we saw the Red Sox over the past couple of nights making mistakes against the Astros. Tonight, it was the other way around, or this afternoon, I should say, rather. That was pretty fun to watch. The Astros are the team that came undone. Carlos Correa getting backpicked by Christian Vasquez, embarrassing for him. And then, of course, you had the inning where Andrew Benintendi, routine ground ball, he hits to Yuri Gurriel, goes between his legs. And also in that same inning, Alex Bregman just completely airmails a ball, rather, over the first baseman's head. So it was actually the Astros tonight, or this afternoon, that made the critical mistakes. And it was the Red Sox that didn't, because we saw earlier in the series, it was the Red Sox just making mind-numbing decisions and mind-numbing mistakes. You think about it on Friday night, Steve Pierce looking for Chris Sale covering first base, throws it nowhere near him whatsoever. Then in that rundown situation on Friday night, Michael Chavis and Steve Pierce just not on the same page whatsoever. And then we look at last night, it was the base running for the Red Sox, right? It was J.D. Martinez and Andrew Benintendi, where J.D. Martinez with first and second with two outs, right? First and second with two outs with the American League MVP, Mookie Betts at the plate, what happens? Well, J.D. Martinez acts like he's going to go to third base, and then he stops. Andrew Benintendi is kind of at his mercy there. So he has to stop as well, and then he gets in a rundown. And Mookie Betts does not get to bat with first and second and two outs. Instead, he comes up the next inning with nobody on base. So it was actually the Astros tonight that made those mistakes. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you for about the next hour and a half or so right here on Red Sox Review. Sorry for the voice. Dealing with a little bit of an injury, if you will, coming off the IL. Lost the voice earlier in the week, so I finally have it back. So happy to be back in the air after a rough week in terms of an illness, but I am back. I'll make up in content for what I can't with the voice at this particular point in time. But I wanted to start this thing off with E-Rod, because you look at this, okay? Coming into the series, it would have been likely to say the Red Sox lose 2 of 3, but not in this fashion, right? You expect, okay, Sale wins a game on Friday night, or they pick up a win on Saturday, but not in this fashion. Not that E-Rod goes into Minute Maid and outpitches Justin Verlander. And oh, by the way, Justin Verlander at Minute Maid against the Red Sox, not so good his last couple of times out. You think about it back to the postseason where David Price goes in there on short rest and he outpitches Justin Verlander, who is, if not the best pitcher in the American League, one of the top three pitchers in the American League, one of the front runners for the Cy Young at this point in the season. And then what happens today with the Astros having an opportunity to sweep the Red Sox, E-Rod goes in there. Rodriguez goes in there, and he outpitches Justin Verlander. So not exactly an ideal performance for Justin Verlander. But nonetheless, it is pretty fun to see the Red Sox. And I'm not saying they beat up on him, right? So last year it was four runs in that ALCS game four. And then in today's game, it was three runs, right? So it's not like they clobbered Justin Verlander, but they're having much more success against Justin Verlander than most other teams in Major League Baseball have had, not only this year, but in the past couple of years. But I want to start with E-Rod here because you look at it, and to me, it's one of these things where I don't want to get too excited about anything that E-Rod does at this particular point in his career. I give him a ton of credit for today's outing because I thought that could have been disastrous for a little bit there. You look at how things started, right? Diaz leads off the game with a laser, and then you had Correa hammered the ball past Devers, and then you had Nunez with the inaccurate throw to the plate, and then Vasquez cannot hold on to the ball. He goes to tag the runner without the ball, and he allows a run to come in there. And it was a hard hit ball by Correa. But nonetheless, you got to make a better throw than that if you're Nunez. And Vasquez, if you're going to tag the guy, make sure you have the ball in your glove. But nonetheless, you thought, oh boy, this could be more of the same for the Red Sox today. Not only that E-Rod was not looking like he was going to have a good outing, but also the fact that the defense looked horrible in the first inning as well. And E-Rod going back to that Toronto game was horrible earlier in the week. So you figured, oh, is this another bad outing for E-Rod? And it looked that way in the first inning. And then the even more concerning thing to me is because he settled down a little bit in that second inning, but then you look at the third inning, and he comes out for that third inning, and Alex Bregman up at the plate. Remember when he ripped that double? You had E-Rod do this weird, like, leg kick thing where he double pumped. He almost, like, paused his leg kick for a second there. And you're thinking to yourself, I've never seen him do this before. And it was almost one of those things where you're saying, this is a very desperate man right now. This is a very desperate pitcher. He is searching for things at this point in the game. He is searching for things right now. And that's where I said to myself, this is going to be a bad outing. And credit E-Rod, because he was able to completely change this thing around. He goes six innings, gives up just one earned run, just four hits, five strikeouts, 98 pitches. This is by far the best outing of the season. I get he pitched well against the White Sox, and I get he pitched well against the Mariners. Outstanding starts there, but those are bad teams. Those are horrible teams. This is a lineup that is the best in baseball, and you look, I get it. They're missing two of their best players when you think about it in terms of Jose Altuve, and George Springer, of course, did not play today. But again, this is one of, if not the best offenses in baseball. Statistically, they are the best offense right now in baseball, and you had a great performance from E-Rod that I was not expecting. Here was the manager, Alex Cora, after the game on his lefty.
Alex, what's the biggest difference you saw from Eduardo given the start that he had on Tuesday as opposed to here on Sunday afternoon?
A lot of work in between starts, a lot of conversations. He did an outstanding job. He did. We needed him to go deep in the game. You know, he gave us six. Good stuff. You know, his four-seamer was good. His changeup was good. And very happy that he went out there and competed that way against, probably the best pitcher in the big leagues right now.
Yeah, that's Alex Cora after the game. I agree with him. Pitching against arguably the best pitcher in all of Major League Baseball right now, and he performed. Justin Verlander on the other side. I don't see it as one of these things where E-Rod was facing a lot of pressure today, because it's one of these things where you expected E-Rod to lose. So if he went out there and performed, it's like, wow, this is found money. So he could go out there a little looser than he was at other points in the season. But for him to bear down the way he did today after the way the first inning went, and after that double he gave up to Bregman where he didn't know what he was doing with his leg. I've never seen him do that before where he just kind of pauses. You have to give E-Rod a ton of credit. And you think about it, by far the best pitching performance of the weekend for the Red Sox, because Sale was not great on Friday night. I get that the defense was not good either, but Sale was not great in that game. Gave up a home run to Mariznick. He was not good. And the bullpen had not been great so far in this series. You think about now Matt Barnes bounced back today, but earlier in the series was not good, especially last night. So those are two brutal losses you're coming off of. You think about it. The defense was disastrous on Friday night. And then yesterday, the base running horrendous from J.D. Martinez and Andrew Benintendi. So you had base running issues yesterday. You had defensive issues on Friday. This was a game that you needed to have. And E-Rod went out there, and E-Rod was able to perform. But the reason I don't want to get too excited about this, the reason that I don't want to go crazy about E-Rod really performing well is because does anybody say, like, after this performance against the Astros, that you're saying to yourself right now, you know what I trust? I trust that E-Rod is going to come out on Friday night against the Yankees, which is his next scheduled start, and he's going to perform at a high level. He's going to perform like he did tonight. Because quite frankly, we don't see that from E-Rod, right? We saw back-to-back good starts against the White Sox and the Mariners, but other than that, he hasn't put together two good starts in a row all season. You look at it, 11 starts this year, he's had four really good starts. four out of 11 have been really good. He's had some horrific performances as well. So I just don't want to get so excited about a guy that we just saw the other night, Tuesday, six earned runs against the Blue Jays, where he gives up three home runs, and Tellez gets him twice, and Randall Grichuk got him in that game as well. So I just view this as, Erod, I don't want to have expectations for the guy at this point. Right, I don't want to have too many expectations for Erod right now. It's almost like if you're driving in the city one day and you don't hit any traffic whatsoever, right? You just kind of take that as a win. But you know the next day it's going to come back and you're going to hit a ton of traffic. That's kind of how I feel about Erod. I'm just going to take it for what it is today. I'm going to enjoy the fact that Erod went out there, went into Minute Maid Park, and he outpitched Justin Verlander. I'm going to enjoy this moment, but I'm not going to have expectations going forward with Erod, because the problem with Erod is I've done it too many times as a Red Sox fan throughout my life, and I'm sure you have as well. This is 5 years for Erod. He's now 26 years old. How many spring trainings have we heard from Erod? This is the best stuff on the team, right? We hear that all the time out of spring training. Oh, this is the best that Erod's ever looked, and we never actually get a full season of Erod in terms of a high level of success. You think about it, last year, they only trusted him to start one game in the postseason, and that was against the Dodgers when the series was ultimately already over. They were up 3-1, and you knew they were going to win the series, whether they won that game in Los Angeles or if it came back to Fenway Park. Eventually, they were going to win the series. It was over. That's the only game he started in the postseason last year. So you can't trust the guy. I mean, you look at him coming into today, a 3.82 ERA. Last year, this year, that's up to 5.43 rather. So I don't want to just sit here and say, I'm so happy with the performance that Erod had, and this is something that is going to propel him going further. I would love to see him have another great start against the Yankees, but I just can't trust that he's going to go out on Friday night and we're actually going to see that from Erod. I mean, some of the things today, I mean, not just today, but you look at it in terms of the season, because today he was great. There's no debating that. He was great today. But you look at the season, the thing that really sticks out to me about Erod's season: lefties are hitting 357 against him with an OPS over 1100. Okay, so lefties, if you put it into the proper perspective, are better than Mookie Betts was a year ago. That's how good lefties are hitting right now against Eddie. And last year versus lefties, 234 batting average, 691 OPS. So the batting average is up more than 120 points, and the OPS is up more than 400 points against lefties this season from Erod. So I'm just not going to go crazy about this start from Erod and expect that we're going to see anything long term. I don't want to buy too much into what Erod did today. Like I said, what I want to do with Erod's start today is I want to enjoy it in the moment and say, look, they avoided a sweep at the hands of the Astros, and I love the fact that they keep beating Justin Verlander. That's awesome to see, because Justin Verlander, as Alex Cora said, is the best pitcher in Major League Baseball, arguably the best pitcher in Major League Baseball right now, and you have beaten him the last two times you have faced him. A clinching game in the ALCS last year, and also you look at today's game, a big game that you avoided a sweep in. So I'm going to look at Erod today. I'm going to say, you know what? Great. Erod pitched well, but I'm not going to buy into it whatsoever. Show me this for three or four outings in a row at least. I can't just buy into a guy pitching well in one game. Now, was it huge for the Red Sox? Certainly. Nobody would debate that. But I need to see it for a longer period of time from Erod before I get too excited. So I'm not going nuts over Erod today. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you for about the next hour and a half or so. Let's get to Freddy's in Maryland. What's up, Fred?
How are you today, Brian?
What's up, Fred?
Well, I'm a little upset with Mr. Cora.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, he picks these three games to give his best players a rest.
Yep.
Why does he pick these three games? Why does he pick a team that's not as good? He lost one of these games because Devers wasn't in it, the second game.
Yeah, Fred.
I don't understand his rationale to rest the guys that are getting millions of dollars a year against the best team in the league.
I don't know, man.
Okay, Fred, first thing I would say to
you, how do you feel about that?
Okay, so first thing I would say to you is this. I understand that these guys are making a lot of money, but they need days off. But I am with you on your original point. Why can't you do this against the Blue Jays? That really has irritated me all weekend long, because you think about it, to your point. Okay, Friday night, you think you would want to have Devers in the game, because Devers right now is sixth in the American League in batting average. The guy's been absolutely incredible. This was, what, his fourth home run of the week? Really should have had five home runs if you didn't have that stupid roof there at Minute Maid Park yesterday, right? So he was excellent yesterday, and you could have had him in the lineup on Friday, but they didn't have him in there. Yesterday, J.D. Martinez, after missing the whole series against the Blue Jays with an illness and the fact that he was dealing with a back issue, you gave him another day off on Saturday. I don't understand that whatsoever. And then today, it's Xander Bogaerts who is out of the lineup. Now, look, Nunez fills in at shortstop, had a hiccup defensively, but he actually had a couple of hits, one of them an infield hit. The guy has more infield hits, I think, than anybody I've ever seen play. But I agree with your point, Fred. If you're going to rest these guys, do it against the Blue Jays. Don't do it against the Houston Astros because this is the best team in Major League Baseball. I want the best team on the field for the Red Sox. So I completely agree with your original point there.
Thank you.
All right, 617-779-7937 is the number if you want to grab Fred's line. That did really irritate me to begin the weekend. That's something that really concerned me because you heard right at the beginning of the series that Alex Cora was going to give these guys days off. So Friday night was going to be Rafael Devers' day off. And I get that Devers, I believe, if I'm not wrong, he had played in every single game so far this season. So eventually you were going to give him a night off. I understand that. But why does it have to be against the Astros? That's my concern, is why does it have to be against the Astros? This is the best team in Major League Baseball, the best team that you're going to have to face if you want to get back to where you want to get to, which is getting to another World Series. This is a team that you're going to have to go through. I would just like to see the best team on the field for the Red Sox. Then J.D. Martinez, that's the one that's really mind-numbing to me. J.D. Martinez is somebody that I understand he was battling the flu all week, and I understand that he was dealing with a back issue. So he's somebody that you want to make sure is healthy. But why does he play Friday night and then doesn't play on Saturday after already missing four games earlier on this week? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. And then you look at today's game, and I get it. Nunez had a couple of hits. And Nunez, shockingly, this was one of the most bizarre things I saw before the game. Did you realize that Nunez is hitting .333 against Justin Verlander in his career? How is that guy having success against Justin Verlander? Makes no sense to me whatsoever. And you can see some of it, the cheap hit he gets today. That guy gets more cheap hits than anybody in Major League Baseball. I swear, the guy gets more infield hits than anybody. But nonetheless, you could have still had Bogaerts, who is playing unbelievable baseball right now, save the defensive performance on Friday night. He's playing unbelievable right now. You would have loved to have Devers, or Bogaerts rather, in the lineup today. You could still have Nunez in there at some point, right? You could still have Nunez maybe if you want, because Cora loves to DH the guy. You could have still had him in there. But that really does irritate me. I don't understand why Cora decides to do it against the Astros. Why are the days you're giving these guys off against the Astros? That's the thing that it's really shocking to me. I really don't understand the point of it. And look, I understand that guys need days off, but this isn't basketball. This isn't the NHL. This isn't the NFL. Okay, I understand that in those sports that it's more grueling physically, and baseball too. Oh, you're on your feet all the time. Okay, whatever. Okay, I get it. But it's not as taxing as other sports, and you don't need to give these guys days off in this series. Like, you could have picked any other series over the past couple of weeks. You've played horrible teams lately, right? The past few weeks, you've played the Mariners, you've played the White Sox, you've played the Orioles, you've played the Blue Jays. Give the guys days off in one of those games. Okay, that's the time to give one of those guys days off, not in the series against the Houston Astros. But now you look at it. So over the past 2 weeks, you had six games against the Astros. Two out of six you come away with if you're the Red Sox, and it easily could have been a split. Easily could have been a split if you look at it from this perspective. We go all the way back to the previous series. Rick Porcello, remember, goes out there and has, what, the seven scoreless innings. And then you bring him back out there, right? And you allow him to face George Springer if you're Alex Cora for a fourth time. And going into that at bat, Springer was 8 of 19 in his career against Rick Porcello. And what does Springer do? Home run. That's essentially the game right there. So this easily could have been a split. The Red Sox clearly are not playing their best baseball of the season. Clearly they are going to be better as this season progresses. And you very easily could have taken three out of six from the Astros rather than two out of six. And this is a gut check win for the Red Sox today. That's the one thing I'm going to give this team a lot of credit for today, is because after the way this series has gone, where you were embarrassed on Friday night from a defensive perspective, Bogaerts made critical mistakes. Steve Pierce made critical mistakes. That ball he threw way behind Sale. Absolutely alarming. Atrocious. And then the rundown. How embarrassing was that the other night when Pierce comes off the base and Chavis could have thrown the ball earlier? So it's on both of them. I don't want to blame one guy more than the other, but they both make critical mistakes at that particular point in the game. You could blame Pierce or you could blame Chavis. The point is, you can't make those kind of mistakes in a big league game, right? So you had those kind of mistakes. And then yesterday, the base running blunder. Unbelievable. And then your closer, who bounces back today in the eighth inning, pitched well, did Matt Barnes. But he comes out there, he walks a pair of guys, gives up a double to begin that inning to Diaz. Yeah. And then later on in the inning, gives up the game-winning hit to Correa. Barnes goes out there, doesn't record an out. So your closer doesn't record an out. You have base running issues with J.D. Martinez and Andrew Benintendi. The night prior to that, it's the defensive side of the ball was just absolutely atrocious. And this team is able to bounce back today with Justin Verlander on the other side, right? Justin Verlander on the other side, who has been mowing down teams right now, has been pitching his best of the season. Like, he has been on an absolute tear. He has been on an absolute tear as of late. And the Red Sox are able to salvage a game out of this series. I give them a ton of credit for this. So the one thing you have to say about this Red Sox team, they do have guts. This team does have guts, and you have to give them credit for what they were able to do today, because I penciled this in before the game started. They were going to lose this game. That's what I was saying. They were going to lose this game, get swept by the Astros, and then what was the narrative going to be? What was the narrative going to be after you had lost two of three last weekend, and then you got swept at Minute Maid? So I give them a ton of credit for pulling this game out, because I did not see this coming. All right, a lot more to get into. What did you make out of Eduardo Rodriguez's start? Also, the fact that you had Rafael Devers, another unbelievable performance. What do you make of the start to the season for Devers so far? Plus, some big Patriots news we'll get to as well. You're listening to Brian Barrett right here on WEI.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Here's the pitch on the way, and a swing and a chopper slowly toward third base. Devers barehanding, quick throw. He got him at first. What a play by Rafi Devers.
Wow, that's the best play we've ever seen him make coming in on a ball like that. Wow.
Recapping the Red Sox win against the Astros.
The right-hander deals home. Devers swings, high drive, center field hit pretty good. Marisnik going back, track to the wall, looks up, and it's gone. Rafael Devers to dead center field. He hits a bomb off Verlander, and the Red Sox lead 2-1.
Dial 617-779-7937.
Alden fires, and there's a high fly ball, right field deep. Mookie back to the warning track by the bullpen. Waits and has it for the out. The ball game is over, and the Red Sox beat the Houston Astros 4-1 the final.
Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett on WEEI.
All right, so before I get back to the Red Sox, quick note on the Patriots. Ben Watson facing a 4-game suspension. He announced it himself on Instagram and on Facebook and whatnot. He claims that he was taking testosterone. He was prescribed testosterone from a doctor because he did not believe he would be returning to the NFL. Remember, he had announced his retirement and then decided that he was going to come back and play for the Patriots. He's 38 years old, so now you're not going to have Ben Watson in all likelihood for the first 4 games of the season if you're the New England Patriots, which means you're stuck with Austin Seferian Jenkins and Matt Lacoste.
Oh, boy.
Right now as your tight ends. Not exactly an ideal situation for the Patriots. And oh, by the way, Watson was not great last year for the Saints, and he's 38 years old. So he claims that basically a doctor prescribed this for him so he could get better and recover from his injuries and whatnot. And this is a situation where he did not imagine he'd be playing again, and then he gets popped. He tests positive for testosterone because he was prescribed it from his doctor, according to him. So he'll be suspended in all likelihood for the first 4 games of the season as he's facing that 4-game suspension. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so on Red Sox Review. If you want to react to the Ben Watson suspension, certainly welcome to do that, but want to stay on script here, get back to the Red Sox. And you heard basically the whole highlight today was Rafael Devers, right? That was basically the whole highlight. Joe Castiglione on the broadcast said that was the best play he's ever seen Rafael Devers made, where he basically is charging the ball and throws an absolute rifle over to first base. Devers was great in the field today. And then also you factor in the bat, which right now he leads Major League Baseball with 88 hard hit balls. Ian Brown tweeted that out earlier from MLB.com. So Devers now this week. Think about Devers' week. So he homered on Monday. He homered on Tuesday against the Blue Jays. And then he homered again on Wednesday against the Blue Jays. And he would have had a home run yesterday if it wasn't for that stupid roof in Minute Maid Park. And oh, by the way, can we address the ground rules there? What is going on? Okay, you have a situation there where a guy hits a ball that was estimated to go, what, 363 feet or whatever it was? It would have been out of essentially any ballpark in Major League Baseball to right field. And basically, when it hits the roof, it's in play. So he gets to second base. Like, how is that the ground rules there? How is that allowed by Major League Baseball? It makes no sense to me whatsoever. And really, if you look at it, could have totally changed that game because Devers does not eventually come around and score in that game. He does not score a run there. And that could have been critical for this team. All right. But you think about it. So he should have had a home run yesterday. And then he hits another home run today off Justin Verlander. So really, he should have had 5 home runs this week. He ends up with just 4. So we'll give him 4.5. How about that? We'll give him 4.5. We'll put that in the stat sheet. 4.5 home runs this week for Devers. Okay. And you were waiting for the power, right? That's the one thing you were waiting for from Rafael Devers, is when is the power going to come? Because coming into today, 6th in the American League with a .326 average, and that's now moving up. He's 9th in on-base percentage at .391. He's 22, okay? Look at the improvement he made from last year to this year. Okay, average last year, .240. This year, that's up to .326. So he's up 86 points. On-base percentage, .298 last year. That's up to .391. So that's up almost 100 points. The OPS, .731 to .883. So that's up more than 150 points, and that's only climbing. And I look at Rafael Devers right now. 617-779-7937 is the number. I look at Rafael Devers right now as the most intriguing, the most fun player to watch on the Red Sox, because you can go through the lineup, right? JD Martinez, we all love to watch him play. He's a machine. He is a hitting savant, if you will. We know about the impact he's had on everybody else on the team. We hear that all the time, right? But JD Martinez is a machine, and he doesn't usually play in the field. He's the DH. He's exciting to watch when he comes up to the plate, but other than that, you don't really get that excitement level with JD Martinez. You appreciate his greatness, but you don't get super excited like you do with Rafael Devers. Mookie Betts, I get it. The athleticism, the hands are ridiculous. We see him play in the field. It's awesome, right? He's a great player. He's probably number 2 on my list right now if I'm talking about the guys that entertain me the most in terms of this Red Sox team, okay? But other than really when Chris Sale is on the mound, and we've only seen that, what, 3 times this year, because the other times he just, quite frankly, has not been Chris Sale, not Chris Sale level of dominance that we've seen in the past. For me right now, it's Rafael Devers, because you think about it, a lot of these prodigies come up and they succeed right away. And when we look at from Rafael Devers' perspective, maybe he was rushed up to the big leagues a little bit too early. So he struggled at the beginning of his career. Even you go back to last year. Now, I get it. He had the big home run against Justin Verlander in the ALCS. So you knew that he was built for the moment. But remember, last year, he was a platoon guy at third base. He was a platoon guy. And now you look at it this year, he's turned out to be one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball so far this season. Without question, is going to be an all-star this season. And he's fun to watch. You look at Rafael Devers. I mentioned the fact that he has more hard hit balls than anybody in Major League Baseball. And you're wondering to yourself, when is the power going to come? And all of a sudden this week, he hits 4 home runs and it should have been 5. And the thing about Rafael Devers is, how about all the faces the guy makes when he's up at the plate? The guy is constantly hitting himself in the head. He's making these weird faces where he turns his head almost like he's a dog or something, like making those weird faces like a dog does when a dog is confused, like after a pitch or whatnot. Devers is the funnest player to watch in the Red Sox right now. You look at the way, too, like his feet are not natural in the box. His feet are moving all over the place half the time. You're thinking to yourself, how the hell did he put that ball in play? And then it's going over the fence. He's incredible to watch right now. And the improvement of Devers is absolutely ridiculous. And I give Alex Cora a ton of credit, because remember at the beginning of the season, there were actually people calling up this very program, Red Sox Review, that said send him down to AAA because he wasn't playing well defensively. And if you look at the defensive metrics, he's actually fine. He's actually been fine all season long. And you saw the play he made today in the field. It was absolutely outstanding. So the Rafael Devers is not great defensively has always been exaggerated. And the bat has always been the thing that you were intrigued by with Rafael Devers. So literally, you're talking about 6 weeks ago, people were concerned about the future of Rafael Devers. And now he has been the best player on the Red Sox all season long. He's the best player on the Red Sox right now. This is a team that set the record in terms of franchise wins last year. This is a team with Mookie Betts, the American League MVP. J.D. Martinez, who was an MVP candidate a season ago, who's one of the best hitters in all of Major League Baseball. And right now, this season, Rafael Devers is having a better season than both of those guys. So the improvement from Rafael Devers has been absolutely incredible to see. And it's great to see it happen right before our eyes because you saw him battle through all these different things throughout his career where it was the fielding and then it was the inconsistency. Remember last year, what was the big issue with Rafael Devers? He chased too many balls out of the zone. That was a massive issue for Rafael Devers last year. And this year, he is way away from that when you're talking about a guy that has an on-base percentage that is nearing 400. So you talk about the improvement from Rafael Devers, it's right there with his approach at the plate. And we've seen over the past couple of weeks or so, defensively, he has been much better as well. He has been a much better player from a defensive perspective. So you have to give Rafael Devers a ton of credit in that regard. And you would expect the power numbers are going to continue to come. Because if you hit four home runs in a week, and it really should have been five, we always knew he was capable with the power numbers. We just hadn't seen it so far this season. And now he's going on an absolute tear in terms of the power numbers as well. The one thing I'd say to Alex Cora is it would have been really nice to have that guy in the lineup on Friday. That would have been nice. I still don't understand the manager deciding to sit these guys out in this particular series, right? Why do you need to give Rafael Devers a day off Friday? Why does JD need a day off on Saturday? And why did Xander Bogaerts need a day off today? Why couldn't you do that and say, like, you know, the Blue Jays series when you're not playing, you know, the best team in Major League Baseball? That would have made a lot more sense to me. But for whatever reason, Alex Cora decided to do it this way. And Rafael Devers had the night off Friday. It was JD Martinez yesterday after JD didn't play all week because of an illness and because of a back issue. And then Xander Bogaerts doesn't play today. So you're talking about three of the four best players on the team. You were without one of them, at least in every game this series. At least in every game this series, you were without one of those guys, which I didn't particularly have a big positive feeling about. And it didn't make me happy watching this team. It made me more aggravated than anything else. I still don't understand why the manager decided to go in that direction. But nonetheless, he did. And this team is able to salvage a split. E-Rod, in terms of what he did today, give him a ton of credit. But as I said, I'm not buying into E-Rod. And I'm just going to treat this for what it was, a one-off scenario. He pitched well in one game. But remember, he got blasted by the Blue Jays last time out. The start before that, remember, he started against the Rockies. He was spotted a five-run lead, and he gave it up, right? He had to come out of the game when it was 5-5. Couldn't get through the seventh inning with 8-9-1 coming up. And oh, by the way, his numbers against lefties this season has an OPS over 1,100 against. So I'm not buying into E-Rod. I'm not one of these people that's going to say, oh, yeah, E-Rod is turning a corner, because we've heard that for so many years with E-Rod, is that, oh, every spring training we hear his stuff is great. He has the best stuff on the team and all that different type of narratives, if you will, all those different type of narratives with E-Rod. And then you see him, okay, great against the White Sox, and he's great in a game against the Mariners, but then against the Blue Jays, he's horrible. Against the Rockies, he's horrible. Now he has a great start against the Astros. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to buy into E-Rod and say, oh yeah, I can trust E-Rod going forward. Remember last year, they trusted him to pitch what? One postseason game, and that was against the Dodgers. So I still don't know what the role will be for E-Rod when you get into the most critical juncture of the season, which is the postseason, which you still expect this team to get to. When you get to that point in the season, what is E-Rod's role on this team? Is he just a long guy out of the bullpen? Because right now you can't trust the guy. I understand you have a lot of season left, but at what point are you just going to accept E-Rod for what he is? We're 5 years into this thing. He has an ERA over 5 this season. He's never been somebody that has gone deep into games, and he's never been somebody that has actually lived up to the hype, where he was the number one pitching prospect in the Orioles organization. He's never lived up to that hype since he came over to the Red Sox. So it's great that he pitched well today, and it was much needed, and you go out there and you outpitch Justin Verlander. A lot of credit to E-Rod. But show me this for 4 or 5 starts in a row, and then maybe we can start buying into E-Rod. Because right now you can't, based on the way that One outing, it could be great. The next outing, he's given up three home runs against the Blue Jays, who came into that series 30th in all of Major League Baseball on average, dead last. So I'm just not going to buy into Erod right now. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Paul. He's in Westfield. What's up, Paul?
That's so funny what you said about A-Rod giving up the home runs to a minor league team. And then that's true. But, boy, what a difference today. Two words.
He was great.
We're alive. Yes, sir. You're practical and rational. I agree. Just think if he can hone in that ability he showed today, right?
Yeah, but the problem is, Paul, do you trust that he's ever going to be able to do it consistently? Consistently, rather. That's my issue.
So far, not yet, just like with David Price. But, boy, he picked it up in that game in Yankee Stadium when it counted. And I got a kick out of your description. I don't have cable out in the woods of Westfield, so I saw them play today. And you're right. What a bunch of nuts up at the plate. And imagine Devers, 440 feet, 114 miles an hour off the bat. And you did mention the fifth home run he was robbed because he hit the ceiling in the Astrodome. Yeah. I don't ever think that hardly ever happens. He is freaking monster. And you know what we're seeing is we're seeing it develop in ways we didn't expect because, like you said, they're ready to send him down. Now he's at the top. And then look at our number one home run guy. We didn't expect that. And what's up with Cheevers? He's off the bat, too. We got, like, these new guys this year. Moreland is the number one home run hitter. Think when J.D. Martinez and Mookie catch up, we're looking like an ill team if we just keep getting better.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Paul. You can grab his line if you'd like to. 617-779-7937. I never really worried about the lineup whatsoever. Now, there's some dead spots in the lineup. Certainly, you know, with Sandy Leon, and I get Jackie Bradley Jr. had a decent week, but, you know, for the most part, he's been a dead out in the lineup for the majority of the season. Pierce, I get it. He's starting to at least play a little bit better. At least he's contributing a couple of hits because he had been horrible up until this point. But the lineup in general, nobody was concerned about that. Now, the emergence of Chavis, nobody saw that coming, although he looked awful against Verlander. Verlander just said, I'm going to throw you fastballs. Let's see if you can hit them. And quite frankly, Chavis was not up to the task. But you can't really criticize anything Chavis has done this season because he's been incredible in terms of giving this team an injection of talent when they needed it. Because you look at second base, we all understand what's going on with Pedroia. Again, the guy needs to come out of a game. You don't know when he's ever going to be back. Brock Holt is going to be activated tomorrow. And Holt is somebody that's been battling injuries. We know Nunez isn't a solution at second base. So all season long last year, that second base spot was an issue. And now this year, it's not an issue because of what Chavis can bring you from an offensive perspective. It's amazing to have a power hitter at that position, which you haven't had in ages, right? So it's really nice to have Michael Chavis there, and his emergence has been outstanding. And then the Devers improvement. You thought that Devers would be better this season, but to be one of the best hitters in the American League, you did not see that coming. And the guy's only 22. So it's incredible. And we knew what you were going to get from Mookie, even though Mookie's not having a typical Mookie season. JD has been good. You'd like to see the power numbers come up a little bit more. And by good, I mean good for his standards, because what he did last year was absolutely ridiculous. So, but for the most part, you expected this lineup to be one of the best three in the American League. And quite frankly, they look like they have the capabilities of doing that. So you knew the lineup was going to be there. With the pitching staff, you have some frustrations, if you will. Price, it's an injury yesterday in terms of flu-like symptoms. So not an injury. I'm glad it wasn't the elbow, because at first when that report comes out that he's leaving with flu-like symptoms, I'm like, this is a little fishy. Flu-like symptoms, a guy that just is coming off elbow tendonitis. Then he actually texts Fox, right? He texts Ken Rosenthal to tell him, no, it's actually not my elbow. He really had the flu. And it makes sense. Your body's weak. And you saw, like, the fastball velocity was down. His changeup was like 81 miles an hour. John Smoltz on the broadcast originally thought that he was just taking more off of his changeup. It's like, no, this guy's actually really, really sick. So it makes sense from that perspective. I'm glad that it's not another elbow issue for David Price. But Sale has not lived up to the contract so far. It has not been a good season for Sale. Porcello has turned things around. Erod has been completely inconsistent. And Nathan Eovaldi, the $68 million man, I don't know how you judge that guy's season. He starts it off with an ERA of 6, and we haven't seen him for a couple of weeks, or more than a couple of weeks now, because of the elbow issue. So do you actually trust that he's going to come back and be a viable option in that rotation? Because I get how great he was during the postseason last year. But remember, this is a guy that as a starter throughout his career has a 4.21 ERA. So he's never been a great pitcher outside of those 22 and a third innings that he had last year in the postseason. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Ken. He's in California. What's up, Ken?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you got?
Good. Well, a couple things. One, I agree with you about Erod. He is a bullpen eater. Two, Petey is done.
Hey, Ken, hold on one sec. Ken, hold on one second. Yeah. Let me go to your first point. What do you mean he's a bullpen eater?
He can't pitch more than five innings.
Oh, he eats up the bullpen. I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. You can't go deep in the games. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you because, remember...
he's a bullpen eater. He's a killer.
Yeah, Ken, remember this. In that Rockies game, Alex Cora tried to give him a little bit more rope when they took a, what was it, a 5-2 lead. He sends him out there for the seventh inning.
Can't do it.
Yeah, 8-9-1, right, with lefties coming up. He's been awful against lefties somehow this season, but 8-9-1 coming up, he can't get through that seventh inning, gives the lead away, enters, or leaves the game, rather, with a 5-5 game. So, yeah, I agree with you. He does tax the bullpen a lot. But back to your number two point. What was that again?
I have one more after that. Petey is done. Pack it in. Not going to happen. Pack it in. And number three, why in the world would you tinker with something that was amazingly good? And that is swapping Benintendi and Betts in the order. It doesn't work. Mookie gets on. He can steal a base. Benintendi hits a ground ball to the right side. Third base, one out. Come on, Alex, think, think.
Yeah, I know. It's two good points there, Ken. 617-779-7937 is the number if you want to grab his line. To his second point about Pedroia, I mean, at this particular point in time, I don't think that anybody realistically thinks he's going to contribute to this team, right? Because every time that he tries to play, first of all, he tried to play at the beginning of the season, then he has to leave and go on the DL, or IL rather. Sorry, I keep getting those confused because they changed the terminology this year. Last year, he tried to contribute. Couldn't do anything. This year now, this is what, the second time in terms of a rehab start or rehab stint, if you will, where it's ended early. Just happened 2 weeks ago. Now it's happening again where he couldn't finish up a game. So you can't trust the fact that he's ever going to be a realistic contributor to this team this season. But I think most people would agree with that. It would be a blessing in disguise if he could actually do something. But I just don't see at this point in the season Dustin Pedroia ever being able to contribute to the big league team again. I just don't see it. I mean, look. The guy is, what, 35, 36 years old. He said before the season, it's not even like his knee anymore. So how could you possibly expect that guy to be a viable contributor to this team going forward? I just don't see it. I understand that people have the opinion of, well, it's not that big of a deal because he's not affecting anybody else. And that makes sense. So if he can contribute, like if you have an injury and Moreland gets hurt, maybe you need him to play second base. But the problem is, I just don't think you're ever going to be able to depend on that, right? I don't think you're ever going to be able to to depend on the fact that Pedroia is going to be able to contribute this year because he hasn't proven that he can stay healthy. And until, if I'm Alex Cora, this guy's going to play in the minor leagues for like 2 to 3 weeks in a row because right now he can't play 2 to 3 days in a row. Okay, so that's the big issue there. The one thing I will say, though, to these people that are concerned about Pedroia and the whole Chavis dynamic, don't be concerned about Chavis. Chavis isn't losing any playing time. If anything, they'll find a spot for Chavis to go, right? If Pedroia somehow, like if the miracle happens with Pedroia, if the miracle happens and Pedroia is healthy, and he comes back and he plays some second base, then they're going to find a spot for Chavis. Remember, he's taking balls in the outfield right now. We've seen him play first base. We've seen him play third base. So Chavis is not going to come out of the lineup. So people have to stop being concerned about Chavis coming out of the lineup if Pedroia is able to somehow make his way back. So that's that. That's never going to be an issue whatsoever. The point about Erod, I agree. He kills the bullpen because he can't go deep into games. Today, you just take what you do out of Erod. The guy pitched well today. That's the bottom line. He pitched well today. You give him credit, but it's not something you're buying into. You're not going to say, oh, yeah, I trust that next time out, Erod against the Yankees on Friday night, we're going to see that same typical Erod. Oh, and then to his last point about the batting order. I've never figured this out from the beginning. I really cannot figure this out. Like, I understand where Alex Cora was going on principle. You're saying to yourself, if you're Alex Cora, okay, I have one of the best run producers in all of Major League Baseball in Mookie Betts. If I put somebody in front of him, maybe he can drive in more runs because Alex Cora's point was that Mookie Betts comes up once a game with nobody on base. Okay, so that was his original point. But you have to kind of judge this thing for what it's been this season because Andrew Benintendi, what is it now? He has 3 hits in the entire season in terms of the first inning. 3 hits in the first inning of games. Clearly, he is uncomfortable in that spot. And Alex Cora said today that he's going to continue to hit Andrew Benintendi leadoff against righties, and he's going to be down lower in the order against lefties, and that's when you'll have Michael Chavis or whoever it is. The past couple of games, it's been Chavis in that leadoff spot. You'll change that up. But I've never understood, and it's not like Mookie's been better. Mookie's been significantly, and he's still been really good, but he's been worse than last year. So Mookie was clearly comfortable in that leadoff spot. You had the best offense in Major League Baseball last year, and you changed it for no reason. I don't understand it whatsoever. And even if you wanted to make that change, right? Cora wanted to make a change, it didn't work, okay? Because everything Cora did last year, it worked, and it didn't work. Let's just acknowledge the fact that Benintendi's a bad leadoff hitter. I get his numbers last year in a small sample size were decent at leadoff, but this year they're not. He has three hits or two hits in the first inning all season long. Let's just never hit him leadoff again. It just seems to make sense from my perspective. It makes no sense to have this guy hitting leadoff. 617-779-7937. Let's get to Jason in a car quick. What's up, Jason?
Chris, you know, the biggest problem is when Alex Cora made the decision about having Benintendi hit leadoff. It wasn't after a sample size in spring training or during the early few weeks of the season. This decision was made in January, February. And when you've got the whole team coming back on a World Series championship team, it is pretty gutsy to change things like he did. And I'm kind of surprised by that, because if it's not, you know, if it's not broken, why try to fix it?
Yeah, but Jason, and the other point to what you're saying here is, remember that was like a huge announcement at like the winter meetings? Like they made a big deal about it? Like it was announcement he wanted to make? It's just a bizarre thing. I agree with you. I don't understand. Yeah, the best lineup in baseball last year in terms of the numbers, every statistical category, really, outside of home runs, you led Major League Baseball. I don't know why you change it, but nonetheless, what else did you have?
Chris, Chavis is going to end up being a first baseman down the road, I think. He should be, in terms of his makeup. And then I think the next real big step for the Red Sox, you know, now that they've got, you know, they've signed pitching, they got Bogarts at short, long-term, they're going to have Devers for a while. I think solving that second base position is going to be important, but the biggest problem is, how are you able to get that second baseman of the future to come in when their minor league system is so weak? And that's going to be the biggest problem for Dombrowski. You know, I mean, they won the World Series last year, which is great, but this is not the type of town that's going to sit on that and give him a free pass. As a matter of fact, I think the team has kind of held on to last year a little bit too long for my liking. You know, it's time to move on. Let's go. It's 2019. And I think if the Red Sox are going to try to fill some holes, which I think the bullpen is the first thing, they're going to have to give away something from the minor leagues, which isn't very good. And how is that going to help their minor league system, I mean their major league system, getting a second baseman if they do move Chavis over to first, which I think is inevitable, don't you?
I think at some point, Jason, second base is not going to be his permanent position. It's not. I mean, you look at him, he does not have great hands at that position. When he tried to turn a double play the other day, it was really ugly. I think long-term first base is probably his position. But it's not like the guy's atrocious at second base defensively, and he can hold it down for the season if that's where he's going to be, because the bat plays, you can keep him at second base for this season. All right, a lot more to get into. What did you make of the Red Sox win today? What did you make of Erod's performance? What do you make of the emergence of Rafael Devers this season? One negative I want to get to from this series this weekend as well. We're going to get to a trending in just a second here.
Come on, Alex, think.
Yeah.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Dial 617-779-7937. Now, Red Sox Review on WEEI.
10 days against these guys. What's your overall assessment of how you play them?
I mean, you see the scores. So, you know, I know it's early. I know where they at. I know where we at. But, you know, we just match up, you know, both. We match up well with them. They match up well with us. There's no secrets, as you guys know. It's about execution. You know, there were certain days that we didn't execute it. Today, you know, Yuli makes the error at second. We take advantage of that. So we're pretty even. You know, we know that. It's just a matter of, you know, hopefully I visit some friends in October here. It seems like, you know, that's a goal. Everybody talks about all the teams, but there's a lot of good teams playing good baseball right now. So we just have to concentrate in Cleveland now. And we got a three-game series and do our job.
All right, that's the manager after the game today saying, you know what, we match up pretty well with the Astros. Do you agree with that? 617-779-7937. I'd say the big difference between the two teams right now is the fact that the Astros bullpen is significantly better. Now, you've gotten to it a couple of times, which nobody else has. Remember, Presley had that scoreless inning streak, and Jackie Bradley Jr., out of all people, Jackie Bradley Jr. broke it up the other night with a home run, okay? And the Red Sox own Osuna. So you feel good about that matchup, but think if we're looking at it from the totality standpoint, if you will, you would say that the Astros right now have a much better bullpen than do the Red Sox. You think about what Presley does, and I get it, you own Osuna, but Osuna is somebody that's been very successful this year. Harris has pitched well this year. Josh James has pitched well this year, although today he gives up a run. And oh, by the way, how about the fact that Josh James today, did you see the base that Jackie Bradley Jr. stole? I don't know if I've ever seen that. Jackie Bradley Jr. got such a great jump on Josh James that Josh James just stopped. He just stopped, okay? He just stopped. He didn't even pitch the ball, and Jackie took second base. So today it was the Astros' turn to make the boneheaded, clumsy decisions, or plays, if you will, that the Red Sox were making on Friday and Saturday. Base running blunders, errors in the field. Steve Pierce was horrible Friday night in the field. You look at it yesterday, J.D. Martinez with a boneheaded decision from a base running perspective. Today it was the Astros. Bregman has an error, which is shocking. He's one of the best third basemen in all of Major League Baseball from a defensive perspective. Cora alluded to the fact that Gurriel had a ball go between his legs. He booted a ball, and the Red Sox were able to take advantage of that. They score a run off the Benintendi routine ground ball, which it should have been. So the Red Sox actually took advantage of the Astros making mistakes. But I think in terms of the lineups, you're pretty much even. I get that the Astros' numbers are better this season, but I'd say it's pretty much a wash in terms of the lineups and the way that Devers and Chavis have contributed. You didn't expect that at the beginning of the season. They've elevated you to a different level. Now, the one thing you say about the Astros today is, okay, yeah, Erod's great, but they didn't have Springer in the lineup, and of course, they don't have Altuve. Altuve is still dealing with an injury, and Altuve wasn't having a typical Altuve season before the injury, but the lineups are pretty much a wash. You look at the bullpens, the Astros have the advantage right now, and then you look at the rotation. You trust the Astros' rotation more at this particular point in time, and you also look at it from this perspective. In terms of a good note for the Red Sox, they got something on Justin Verlander lately, don't they? Justin Verlander, clinching game last year. You go after him for four runs today when you have a chance to sweep it. The Astros are chalking the sweep up, right? You got Verlander going against Erod. The Astros are saying, you got this one. Yeah, we have this one. And guess what happens? It's the Red Sox that actually end up taking this game. Out of all the games they could have won in this series, this would have been the last thing I saw coming. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Mike. He's in North Providence. Mike, what's going on?
Hi, Brian. Yeah, two things. One, just a quick one on Devers. Ever since he made that game-costing error, he's just been mega locked in. I mean, both at the plate and in the field. I mean, yeah. I think it, being a young player like him, I think he needed to have something like that happen where his lack of focus really hurt the team, and it kind of put him out there as being the guy that cost them the game, for him to kind of like maybe grow up a little bit. And yeah, go out there with the right mindset.
Mike, and to your point, remember after that, Alex Cora said he's got to be better. He didn't sugarcoat it. He said he has to be better. And Devers, remember, on this very show, people were calling him out and saying, hey, you got to send him down to AAA, which was ridiculous to begin with because we knew the bat always would play. But you're right. That's a good point. That did kind of jumpstart this run for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of like on both ends. I mean, especially defensively, you can really see he's been playing so much better since then. It's a lot, just the focus on the defense has leaked out into the offensive end too. But on the negative side, and what the previous callers have been bringing up, I said to Rob Bradford and John Tomasi before the season began that they were going to be cutting Benny's throat by leading him off. That this was a senseless move. I called it periodically, I think, including with you, about just how foolish it's been to flip these two around. And in fact, he keeps on trying to bat JD cleanup too. And if you look at the numbers this year, JD's is getting an RBI every game batting third, and he's getting an RBI every third game batting fourth. But he still seems to want to jam him into that spot as well. It's one of these things where the logic of the lineup doesn't make as much sense. Mookie is actually on pace to have fewer RBIs this season he had last season, despite the fact that last season he missed almost a month due to injury.
Yeah,
I mean, he is not driving in as many runs batting second as he batted leadoff, and Benny is obviously struggling. And as one of the callers pointed out, the simple fact of Mookie getting on, stealing second, getting moved over to third, and JD bringing him in, this is the sort of like just the inherent logic of the lineup where Mookie is able to use his speed, And Benny is kind of in a perfect spot for him batting second in between Mookie and JD because it insulates him from lefties late in the game, unless it's somebody like Aroldis Chapman. All this stuff has been thrown away, and I understand the concept of a trade-off, but this is a giveaway. You gave away stuff, and you got nothing back by making these choices. All Alex has to do is do the right thing and just go back to the old lineup.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Mike. You can grab his line if you'd like to. 617-779-7937. couple of things there. So to the first point about switching the lineup up, this is what I'd say. Like, okay, if you want to try something different, we've seen it before. Now, if you want to disagree with Alex Cora's original decision, that's your prerogative as well. I never would have switched it because you had the best lineup in baseball last season. In most statistical categories, you led the league. Okay, so I wouldn't have made the switch. But look, it's Alex Cora's prerogative to make these type of decisions, and it's tough to question the guy considering last year everything he did seemed to work. But now that you have new information, right, where Benintendi clearly is not right in the leadoff spot. He has, what, three hits in the first inning all season long. So clearly in that leadoff position, he's not comfortable. The problem I have with Cora now is just acknowledge the fact that you're wrong. Because usually he's not stubborn about things. And it seems like for whatever reason, he wants this to work so badly. But the problem is it's just not working. It's not working for Benintendi at the leadoff position. He's just never going to be a great leadoff hitter. That's what we're seeing. I get he had a minimal sample size last year where he was good in the leadoff spot. But he clearly is not comfortable right there at this particular point this season. And Mookie was comfortable there. And I also love the fact that when Mookie gets on base to begin a game, you start the game off, you put all the pressure on the pitcher because Mookie is one of the best base stealers in baseball. And you take that element away from it. And Benintendi hitting in that second spot, his at-bats are so much easier when you have Mookie Betts on base and then you have J.D. Martinez coming after him. That's another thing I do agree with Mike on. I don't understand the part of J.D. Martinez not hitting third in this lineup every day. I never understood that. Sometimes Alex Cora wants to mix up the lefties and the righties and whatnot, but why don't you want J.D. Martinez guaranteed a plate appearance in the first inning every game? That's what I don't understand. I would want J.D. Martinez hitting third every single game, and I would want Mookie Betts back in the leadoff spot. Clearly, Mookie's numbers are not near what they were a season ago. I get they're still really damn good, but they're nowhere near where they were a year ago. So you have evidence now where you've had a lot of games with Benintendi at the leadoff spot, and it's gotten you nothing. It hasn't worked out for you whatsoever. So why can't you just acknowledge the fact that it's not working out and get Benintendi out of that spot? Because I have to imagine at this point, this has got to be a mental thing with Benintendi. And we heard today that Alex Cora said what? He's going to continue to hit leadoff against righties. And it's going to be somebody else against lefties. We would think at this point, since we've seen it twice already, it's going to be Michael Chavis at that leadoff spot. But why can't you just switch it up and realize that Benintendi is not working out in that leadoff position? Clearly, he's comfortable hitting. Up until last week, he was hitting 320. Okay, 320 after the first inning. Okay, but in the first inning, it killed his batting average because the guy never gets on base. So clearly, this is a point in the season where this is weighing on your player. This is clearly something mental with the player where he cannot hit in the first inning. So get him out of that spot and put Mookie Betts back in the leadoff spot because Mookie, it's not like he's having the same season he was a year ago. So just put him back there. It seems like it's a very easy solution. And for somebody that tries a bunch of different things like Alex Cora has in his short tenure here in Boston, likes to change it up, do different things and all that, it seems perplexing to me that he won't make a simple switch when it comes to this. All right, Brian Barrett with you for about the next 20 minutes or so here on Red Sox Review. Want to get to my one big concern from this weekend series against the Red Sox coming up next. The number is 617-779-7937. This is Red Sox Review on WEI.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Dial 617-779-7937. Now, Red Sox Review on WEEI.
He's great, man. He's been doing well, and that he put a great swing on JV. Like I say, it was going to be a challenge because he keeps attacking him in certain spots. Everybody knows where he's going, so I don't have to kind of hide it. He made some adjustments. He hit the homer, but you know, probably he's not pleased. He had second and third, less than two outs, and he hit a pop-up. So that's the cool thing about it right now. You know, he's taking ownership. He's understanding what he means to our lineup, and he's going to keep getting better.
That's the manager, Alex Cora, on his star Rafael Devers after the game. Another home run for Devers today. So four since Monday, three in a row against the Blue Jays. One on Monday, one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday. Would have had five since Monday if you didn't have that stupid roof at Minute Maid Park there in Houston, where he hits the ball that would have gone, like, it would have been measured at 363 feet, I believe the measurement was. But instead, it hits the roof, comes back in play, and it's just playable. So Devers ends up on second base. Really could have been on third if he was running. But why would you run? You just launched the ball like that. You knew it was going to be out of the ballpark, and then it hits the roof. I mean, what an absolute joke that is, that that didn't count as a home run. Really actually cost the Red Sox. But the guy is 6 in average entering the day, and that's going to go up. So he's probably going to be in the top five looking at, yeah, he's going to be in the top five tomorrow in average. And finally, the one thing you're waiting for is, when is the power going to come with Devers? And it's come over the last week. That's the one thing you were waiting on. Not that you didn't believe he had it in him, because he has the most hard hit balls in all of Major League Baseball right now at 88. So you knew that he had it in him in terms of the power. It's just, it hadn't come yet. And now all of a sudden it comes. So the Red Sox salvaged this in a situation where they could have been swept and Justin Verlander's on the other side and you beat Justin Verlander. Now, the one concern I have from this series, now, there's still concerns in terms of the entirety of the season with this team, like the bullpen. They're about an arm or two short right now. That's the reality of the situation. You have Walden, you have Barnes. Workman pitched well today. The one thing that concerns you about Workman, of course, is the walks. And we didn't see him do that today, but that's been an issue with Workman. The numbers are great outside of the walks. That's the one concern. But outside of that, what are you going to depend on in this bullpen? Because remember, Brazier is supposed to be a high leverage guy, and clearly right now he can't be that, and Cora has put him in to back in a role where he's not somebody you depend on in high leverage situations. So they're going to need another arm or two in that capacity. And I've always said that Eovaldi, if he doesn't work out as a starter this year, he can go back to that Rover role, because his stuff plays out of the bullpen when you're coming with 100 miles an hour or whatnot. The one concern though I had this weekend is Chris Sale. So on Friday night, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 total runs, because he had the defense. I'm not defending the defense. It's not like the defense helped Chris Sale. Pierce, where he throws it behind Sale. And then you have the rundown situation. Bogaerts booted a ball. It was a mess in terms of the defense. Now, they're only charged with 3 errors. Really, it could have been 4. But you think about it. He gives up a home run to Jake Mariznick, the 9-hitter. In the previous game, remember, Mariznick launched a ball off the wall at Fenway the other weekend, if you will, last Sunday. He also walked Bregman in that inning the other night. And he walked Bregman 3 times in his past 2 starts against the Astros. And remember, Bregman is a guy that took him deep in the postseason 2 years ago twice. So you wonder if it's he's afraid to pitch to Alex Bregman. He's afraid to challenge Alex Bregman. That's a concern. And then you think about it from this perspective. He doesn't come out for the 7th inning. He's only at 89 pitches. You have 8-9-1 coming up in the Astros lineup, and Alex Cora did not bring him out for the 7th inning. What does that tell you? That the manager didn't want to send him out there for the 7th inning because he thought he had a better matchup from his bullpen. This is the AC or staff, 8-9-1 coming up. Ordinarily, you trust Chris Sale to go back out there, but because it's the Astros, you didn't trust Chris Sale to do that, okay? And then you look at it from this perspective as well. So the Astros this year is 0-2. 0-2, and the outing last weekend, remember, he didn't even get through the 6th inning. He goes 5 1/3, and he needed to be bailed out by Marcus Walden. Remember, Walden got Mariznick to bounce into a double play ball, because before that, after the Red Sox had tied the game up to get him off the hook, he gives up a bullet off the wall to Gurriel, walks Chirinos, who can't hit. The guy's hitting about 260. Okay, one of the only dead outs in that lineup. Then he walks Reddick, and then Alex Cora has to pull him because he couldn't get through that 6th inning. So this is 2 starts in a row against the Astros where Chris Sale has been, quite frankly, atrocious. And you, for his standards, I'm not saying atrocious from any other pitcher, but for him, that's not a good start, okay? When you can't make it out of the 6th inning in one game, and then on Friday night, you didn't pitch well either. For him, that's not what you want. Out of your $145 million man, that's not what you're paying for. You need better than that from Chris Sale. And you think about it back to the postseason a couple of years ago, where he gets lit up in game 1, where they lose that game, and Altuve takes him deep twice. Bregman takes him deep. And then you fast forward when he comes out of the bullpen against the Astros later on in that series, he gives up a home run to Bregman. And last year, he gives up 2 earned runs. He only gives you 4 innings in his start against the Astros. And I get he was laboring and whatnot. He was dealing with an injury. But the past couple of years against the Astros, Chris Sale has not been good. So if you want to look at a negative result from the series, obviously you drop 2 of 3. But the other thing is this. Chris Sale has not pitched well against the Astros, really, in critical games since he's been in a Red Sox uniform. Got bailed out by Marcus Walden last game. The other night, he was not spectacular, and I'm sympathetic to the fact that his defense did not help him, but nobody says you need to give up a home run to the 9-hitter, Jake Mariznick. You don't have to do that, right? And you look at this going forward, if you are going to get to ultimately where you want to get to, the mountaintop, getting back to another World Series, this is one of the teams you're going to have to go through in the American League. We know what the Yankees are doing at, what, 34-17 entering the day. But the Astros are a complete team. We know about the rotation. We've seen what their lineup can do. And your starting pitcher, for whatever reason, is having a whole lot of trouble pitching against that team. Where can you actually say that when you get to the postseason, you're going to trust this guy? Because we know in September the past 3 years, and I get last year the injury, but you go past to the past 3 years, he has broken down in September. Since he's been in a Red Sox uniform, his two postseason appearances, last year, I understand, dealing with a shoulder injury, but the year prior to that, he was god-awful in the postseason. You could say Farrell overworked him, but Justin Verlander's pitching a ton of innings too, and it's not something where Justin Verlander has a ton of issues in the postseason. I get it, the Red Sox beat him last year, but you look at it in terms of Chris Sale. Do you trust that guy in critical games, meaning in September and in October, especially against this team? Oh, and oh, by the way, quick Bruins prediction before I go. Say the Bruins take this thing 4-1, see it being a five-game series. St. Louis did not impress me in that Sharks series. And the other thing I would look at, why are people so annoyed by this whole Gloria thing with St. Louis? Like, I feel like people around here are just making stuff up to get fired up about the series, right? Stuff to hate St. Louis about. Like the fact that the team has a song, Gloria, that they celebrate with, like, why is that a big deal? We've seen teams in this town use songs all the time. Like, I don't understand why that's something that annoys teams. And oh, by the way, like, if you look at it from the Blues perspective, they were in last place. They hear this song at a Philadelphia bar, and then they end up being one of the better teams in the Western Conference down the stretch of the season to get into the postseason. So why do people get so annoyed with that? Like, why is that one of the issues that fans of the Bruins have with the Blues? That makes no sense to me whatsoever. All right. Thanks to Eamon for producing. I'll be back with you tomorrow after the Red Sox. Full day of coverage here on WEEI as you get ready for the Bruins tomorrow night as well. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.